Good morning, everyone, and I'd like to welcome you to the Information Security Training Lessons Learned presentation. I'd like to thank you for attending this session. I know there's a lot of competing sessions out there, and we'd like to go to all of them if we could. So, again, thank you very much. My name is Michael Cooper. I'm with the West Virginia University. I work in the what we call the Technology Support Center. We do a lot of different things around technology as far as repair work for the institution and all of our students. Like many of you, I wear a lot of different hats. I also do software licensing for the institution. And a few years ago, I got involved in information security. So that's what I want to talk with you about today. So we'll get right into the presentation here. I'd like to tell you a little bit about West Virginia University. We are located in Morgantown, West Virginia. We're a public land grant institution, founded in 1867. We're about 80 miles south of Pittsburgh, so it gives you a little bit of an idea of where we're at. We have 15 colleges and schools offering quite a few degrees, 185 degrees in both undergrad and graduate and professional programs. Our main campus has 28,500 students on it. It is a continually growing campus. Our enrollment went up again this fall. And we have about 21,500 undergrads. About 7,800 faculty and staff on the main campus. And we have four regional campuses around the state. So we do kind of cover the whole state, and especially because we have extension offices in all 55 counties. Those extension offices might include distance learning locations, or it might just be a single extension agent in that particular location. Early on, we recognized that security training was extremely important. It was very important to change the behaviors, what we really wanted to do here. And I had a vested interest in this because running the Technology Support Center, the number of incidents that I was seeing from students, especially of viruses and malware, was climbing. It was just going out of sight. And so my vested interest was to be able to help these students overcome that and reduce the number of calls and incidents that we've seen. And so far, over the last 4 or 5 years, we've seen that happen. So can I attribute it all to our training program? Probably not, but a good bit of it probably is. Our real ultimate goal is to have every first-year student coming to the university take this training. We've accomplished that to a great degree at this point, and I'll show you some of the ways we've done that. We also wanted to have every institutional employee go through the training. And then we would do periodic refresher training as we move forward. We've accomplished this, especially with the first year students. And we're still working on the institutional employees. Why do we need to train? Why do we need to train people about information security? Well, as we all know, educational institutions are a prime target for all kinds of malicious attacks. I don't see that decreasing anytime in the near future. It may change, and that's why we would need to change our training as far as that's concerned. There's a lot of regulations out there that we have to start following or training to. We need to adapt to those changes. I suspect that those kinds of regulations are going to continue to fall upon us. We're going to have to show that we're making some kind of good progress toward educating the constituency about information security. Technology alone is not going to solve the problem. We can use all kinds of technology, but we still have that human factor. And if the human factor is not impacted in some way, then the technology is simply not going to stop the problem. And I see a few smiles out there because this is our biggest problem, is that human factor. We need to impact the social aspect of information security. We need to make it a social issue. We need to get to the individual who's handling the data, who's working with the data on a day-to-day basis, and make sure that they are aware of some of the pitfalls that can be surrounding them. We are teaching tomorrow's educators. And if we can instill information security awareness in those folks, then those educators can pass it on to the next generations and hopefully make the future job that we're doing easier. We're also training those people out there in elementary and secondary education. And if we can pass on a security awareness aspect to them, and they can pass that on to their students, that could be a significant impact. What would happen if every incoming freshman already had a very high level, or at least some level, of security awareness before they ever got to us? That would be a really, really big step to help us. Another factor, and this is a factor that I think is really, really underestimated, social engineering. Some of you may have not heard of that term. We'll talk about a little bit about it. But it's really a primary facilitator for the kinds of attacks that we experience. And it's probably the most misunderstood kind of attack. It truly is a threat. It's a threat that most of us probably have not dealt with at all. This is a kind of an interesting thing. The internet age has really masked the perpetrator. The perpetrator stands off these days. They are not face-to-face to the victim. So without being seen or without being having the potential of being caught during the perpetration of the act, it makes it so much easier for them. All of the internet accesses that we have today really mask that perpetrator tremendously. And of course, we all know every student brings a computer. The computer population is very prolific. I know in our case, we have many, many students that have multiple devices, multiple computers in their room, and consequently, the exposure to the internet and the exposure to cybercrime just continues to grow. We really need to impact the social aspect, but we need to impact daily habits. The kind of knowledge we need to impart to the students and our staff and faculties is from a body of knowledge that in most cases they really don't understand. They're a little bit afraid of it because they think it's technical. They don't want to kind of delve into it. And in some cases, it is hard to grasp. It's hard to understand. So we need to bring it down onto a simple term that they can understand. So what we chose to do was just begin with a few very basic topics and hopefully try to change the everyday habits, the everyday practices of the constituency. That whole habit change is the big thing. And I like to use the analogy of, what do you do when you come up to a stoplight? Do you have to tell your foot to come off the accelerator and move over to the brake? Probably not. It just happens. It's a built-in reaction. Well, if we can get our constituency to do the same thing regarding security threats, then we will be a long ways down the road. Think about changing the daily habits and the daily practices, especially the daily habits. By choosing just a few topics, a very limited number of topics, what happens is you also set up yourself to have a follow-on type training. But the bottom line is if you're only training on a few topics, you're likely to reach the audience, to reach the constituency much better on the front end and at least get their attention. We need to motivate the people. We need to motivate the constituency. If the students, staff, and faculty, as I call it, don't have any skin in the game, then they're probably not going to be very concerned about security. So we need to impart to them a caring attitude about security. Well, in the beginning, we started this whole thing about security training in 2005. And I'll talk just a little bit about that. Before that, we did a lot of things around awareness, but not any kind of training. And in mid-2005, I, as part of my job as a software procurement, I purchased a program. I purchased a licensing scheme to do software, to purchase software for security training. That was in the June timeframe. We actually did not do anything with it until later on, late in that year. And we started out with some pilot sessions. Our awareness program included things like posters and calendars and things like that at some various events, but we really didn't start any kind of training until late 2005. We did some pilot sessions with our students. They were primarily the RAs in some of the residence halls. Getting to those pilot sessions was really interesting because the product we purchased had its own LMS. It really wasn't, it was very difficult to get up and running. But once we had it running, we were able to start some of the pilot sessions. We then moved to our first year experience classes. And that proved to be very good. We had a lot of support from the first year experience group. And they were really on board with this. So that made a big difference right there. And then we moved to some employee pilots. The employee pilots have proved to be the most difficult, primarily because of buy-in, and I'll show you some things about that. As of October 2009, we've trained about 12,000 people. That's a little over that. Most of those are students. Each year we look at somewhere around 38 to 4,000 first-year students. We don't actually touch all of the first-year students at this point. Hopefully we're going to change that this coming fall. So over the last 4 years, we've hit about 12,000 students and faculty members and staff. We developed some collateral. The collateral that we developed was, and this is very important because just the training session is not what's going to really reinforce what they learn in the training session. They'll see it once and they need to have something to reinforce that. Some of the collateral we did a calendar. We actually had a contest for some posters. We just happened to have 12 posters submitted that were selected, and lo and behold, the provost said, let's make a calendar with them. We've developed posters each year using our graphic arts students, and they've actually done a pretty good job of developing some of those posters. And I'll show you a couple of them here. The one on the right was one of the first ones that was done. And if you notice, you kind of have to get up close to it to read some of that small print. It was used actually as a t-shirt and sweatshirt in our nursing program. They did the scrub look with that particular poster. And we've transitioned to some of the posters that we want the person looking at them to not have to get real close. So here's one that says, "Who has your information?" And the dog's got the USB in its mouth. This was actually a real case situation where a faculty member's dog got the USB and it was finally found in the neighborhood by a neighbor. So that's a real situation. We print about 300 to 400 24x36 posters each fall, put them in the residence halls, and post it around throughout the campus. We also print a lot of 11x17s of these and hand them out at various events. Oftentimes we'll see them in various people's cubicles. We typically do a pretty high-res print on these, but I think we get a good bang for the buck out of them. Lesson number one, this is very important. Have a policy in place before you start the program. Without the policy, you're just kind of sitting out there all lonesome, don't have a lot of support. It's very important to have that policy in place. The policy really provides you the authority to move forward. It gives you something to stand on. It's going to help you bring together the resources, and believe me, you're going to need a lot of resources for this, depending upon how far you take it and how you implement it. So the policy should really state what the purpose is, so you get buy-in from that perspective. should state what the scope of your endeavor is, how you're going to deliver it. Are you going to deliver it in lecture, online? What's the consequences of not completing the training, of not doing it? Without the stick, you're going to have a lot of people who aren't going to do it. In our case, delivering it through the first-year student, first-year experience program, it's actually part of the grade. So they have to complete that. They have to actually achieve 80% on the quizzes and to get credit for it. Who's responsible for the policy? Is your Office of Information Technology responsible for the policy in regarding staff and faculty, or is it the Human Resources Department? And in some cases, it boils down to who has the stick. Can your Human Resources Department cut off an account if somebody doesn't complete the training? Maybe not. So it might rest in the Office of Information Technology. Lesson number two. You've got a policy in place, but does everybody follow the policy? We hope they do, but you really need to go out amongst the constituency and garner support, get approval. I happen to work across two different groups. I work in Office of Information Technology and Student Affairs, and they are dramatically different as far as how things operate. So even though it might be an institutional-wide policy, having that support throughout the constituency, maybe through multiple colleges or departments, will certainly help you as you move forward. You're going to impact a lot of people. This is a cultural change. Not everybody's going to want to do it, and you're going to get a lot of pushback. So again, having that support might be really important to you. And as we all know, when you cross academic and administrative boundaries, then things get a little bit interesting, to say the least. So I would encourage you not just to have the policy in place, but get out there amongst the constituency and get the support for what you're wanting to do. Lesson number three. Are you going to buy a commercial product, or are you going to build one yourself? If you're looking for a commercial product, I'm going to tell you some things to really look for. We did that, and we had a lot of interesting learnings from it. You want to really investigate if you can modify the package, because as we all know, we all have certain things that are very specific to our institutions, and that commercial product is probably not going to have those kinds of things in it. How are you going to deliver it? As I said, we bought a commercial product. It had its own LMS. And what really happened was I was asked to make it work inside of our own LMS. I discovered it was SCORM compliant, so that turned out not to be too bad of a task. But it was very difficult to modify it. And so we spent a lot of time working with that package trying to do that. Know your users. Does that commercial product match what your users are? How do they learn? Where is their level of knowledge? I'll talk about later, what is your lowest common denominator? Does that package satisfy the needs of your lowest common denominator? And you might find it interesting discovering what your lowest common denominator is. The attendees, if you're looking at a commercial product, you want to make sure that it conveys these kinds of things. What are the risks that are important on your campus? And as I talk, you want to change the behavioral everyday habits. Does it do that? Does it help them manage the risks? And of course, does it have some technical aspects of information security? I would caution you to really limit the technical aspects. It tends to confuse a lot of people, although you do have to have some of them in there. Does it really convey the best practices for your campus? Or does it allow that person who's taking that training, does it allow them to recognize threats and then be able to act upon them? Does it convey that kind of information to them? And what does it allow them to observe? Again, that observation is what you're going to find is going to be the biggest impact. If you can get the people to observe things, look at that email attachment, maybe right-click on it, see who it's, what it's really going to. What does that link really take you to by right-clicking on it? Those kinds of things. What can they get out of that package that will help them to observe? The training needs to be short. You've got a limited time, a limited amount of attention span for your constituency, and you need to convey as much as possible in a very short time, but yet still understandable. And that's something we all probably try to do. Lesson number four. If you've decided to build your own, really think about that hard. It's a great effort to build your own. What's your content going to be? Do you have the resources to do it? All of those kinds of things. Initially, what we did is we selected a few topics, six topics, very basic. We spent about 9 months developing the content for these topics. And part of it was the processes that we developed. Part of it was the resources. Initially, there was a grand total of two people, myself and one other individual, to develop the product. Note that on these six things, there's not even an introduction. We wanted to kind of get right to the core, and I'll talk about the introduction a little bit later. Again, very basic. We developed this in a within our own LMS. Basically, it was a lot of our collateral that was mixed in with it, and a few different kinds of little flash exercises and things like that. We had some objectives when we went through the development. We wanted to make sure that we could customize it, because we'd already experienced the situation with a commercial product that was extremely hard to customize. And we found a lot of things in that commercial product that just simply hindered us from conveying the message that we really wanted to convey. You want to make sure it adheres to industry standards. You know, the definitions of the various topics within information security. One of the things that we did is we worked with a group of our training folks from human resources, and they were some of our reviewers, and we found that when we first presented to them what the content was that we had, we thought it was pretty good. We spent a lot of time on it, and this was only one of those six modules. Well, they came back and said, well, gee, we don't quite understand that. You need to make it more understandable. And they gave us some examples. And what they were really wanting us to do was to compromise the true definitions within information security. And you can't do that. You're educating these folks. And they need to understand that there's going to be terms in this that they don't understand right now, or they don't know about. So again, take on the role of being the educator here. And you'll probably have to do some pushback around those kinds of things. Again, it needs to be very easy to edit. We all know things change. And of course, occasionally there's some mistakes. So how do you easily edit whatever the content is that you're putting up there? The constituency. We chose to make the product such that it would be applicable for both our staff, faculty, and our students. Why develop two different packages, especially with these very basic topics? You don't want to do a double effort here, so kind of keep that in mind. There's always something new coming up. There's always a new subject. There's always that new kind of rule that you have to apply, that new legislation or something like that. So can you add new subjects and can you add new topics easily? Again, it all boils down to that modifying something very easy. the least common denominator. Hopefully you have some idea of who that is. But most likely, that least common denominator is a little bit lower than you think. In fact, it might be a lot lower. And that was, coming from a technical field, that was one of my biggest surprises, was just how low that lowest common denominator was. And how do you make sure that your content is going to meet the needs of that individual? So the content turns out to be pretty basic. Now, your pushback is going to come from folks just like us in the room that are very technical. And they will think that the content is, if you will, below them. It probably is, but you've kind of got to start somewhere. We delivered our content through the WebCT or Blackboard system. We made it SCORM compliant. We converted to SCORM modules so that we could move it to another LMS if we needed to. Our human resources department is actually doing training and tracking through a different LMS, and we wanted to make sure that we could be consistent with that. And of course, it has a low implementation cost, especially in today's environment. In our case, we had just a very few people working on it. It was more like other jobs as assigned, is what it amounts to. And if you're buying a product, make sure that your implementation cost, what's the full cost of keeping the product and keeping it up to date on a year-to-year basis? Lesson number five. What it's going to take you to develop your own product is going to far exceed your best estimate. You're going to find things that you just didn't think about. The resources that are going to be needed are going to be much more than you probably will estimate, and you need to keep a few things in mind. It's very tedious. It's very time-consuming. Making sure the product is almost error-free or error-free. Have you ever done this before? Have you ever, how many resources do you have to apply to this, and have you personally done something like this? In my case, I hadn't. So, and the other individual had not done anything quite like this before either. But it was difficult to estimate what it was really going to take. If obviously our desire is always to produce that perfect product, and that tends to lengthen things, and especially when you start getting into either debates or whatever about the content itself. Do you need to put this in or that in, or should that not be in, and those kinds of things. So it can really lengthen the process. Lesson number six. Typically, when you develop the process to do something like this, in our case, we went through a module or two, and we tried different things as far as how we were developing it and what have you, and we really got down to a process that we felt was very, very good. And the biggest time-consuming thing that we found about it was the review. You cannot review your content enough. You cannot review the content enough by multiple people, multiple disciplines, those kinds of things. Remember, you're crossing a huge constituency here. And making sure that you have some folks looking at it, if you're developing your own, that will be appropriate for all those constituencies. Review, review, review. Our development process really got down to, we put things in Word or PowerPoint format. We found it easy to exchange the documents, those kinds of things. Continuing to edit the document for clarity. Again, meeting what that constituency was, what's your intended audience. That's why it's so important to know your audience up front and to really get a hold of what's that lowest common denominator. We converted to HTML content so that it would be easy to go into the LMS. And then we developed the quizzes associated with this. Our quizzes are anywhere from 15 to 30 questions for each one of the modules. They're randomly chose. The answers are randomly presented to the student. We did a lot of editing, again, for the clarity of the quizzes. And certainly check your quizzes against the content. The worst thing you want is a question on the quiz that you didn't tell them what it was. Then we converted the quizzes to import into WebCT. We used Respondus for that. I'd actually purchased Respondus a couple years before that and wasn't a user of it and have become a disciple of it. It's a great product to use with WebCT or Blackboard. We did a little add-on in our kind of our second iteration of this. We narrated all of the modules. That narration turned out to be quite a project. I happened to be a person who worked in a TV station in a former life, so I had a little bit of director experience, and I found an individual in human resources that used to be a DJ. So we can kind of combine forces and did the narration for each one of the modules. Link the narration to the content, review the content again, review it for make sure the narration is correct, and the quizzes associated with it, and review again. Continuing to review the product went on for probably about 3 years, and this year I think we did not find any issues associated with it. Lesson number 7. Do I have any project managers in the room? Okay, a couple here. The people we had working on this were not necessarily project managers. And we learned a lot about acquiring project management skills. And as you probably know, good old scope creep, it happens. Things keep getting added. And we initially didn't kind of look at that. We wanted to add some extra modules beyond those 6, especially some kind of an introduction to information security. We chose 3 other topics that we felt were important. Browser security turned out to be probably the most difficult to develop because of the technical aspects and how do you bring that technical information down to that least common denominator so they can understand it. How do they go through the security setups for the various browsers that might be on your campus? You know, right now we need to add Internet Explorer 8 as one of those additions. So again, doing that, I would just encourage you to really employ your project management skills to make sure that you're on time and on track. Lesson number 8. This is kind of important, using that learning management system. We have a common system that we can use for both all of our constituency, and it's delivered through different portals in that, but using the learning management system really made a difference as far as how we delivered the training. The last thing you want to do is do it by lecture. The last thing you want to do is in some kind of a web delivery where you can't track the quizzes, you can't modify things easily, all of that. The learning management system really brings everything together in one place. So use a common learning management system if you all possibly can. The beauty of what we saw was that there's already built-in support for it. We didn't have to support our own application. We didn't have to focus so much on the development in the learning management system. We could take advantage of the instructional technologists that are on board to help us with some of the things. So again, use a common learning management system. Make it as easy on yourself as you possibly can. I want to talk about here this one of the modules we did, the introduction to information security, and just kind of give you a little bit of an idea of what kind of content that we were looking at and what we put in the modules. I actually have a whole other presentation of a little over an hour long of all the modules and their content, but we'll talk about a couple of them here. You know, the basic tenets of information security is the CIA principle: confidentiality, integrity, availability of information resources. Well, that's something you need to convey to the students. And then really tell them what confidentiality is. You know, it's protecting those resources from unauthorized access or how about disclosure. Disclosure is probably is one thing that's hit all of us in some way, shape, or form. Finding somebody's social security number on a web page, grades posted on a web page, all those kinds of things. And that's really about confidentiality. And then, of course, integrity, protecting against those changes. The person who has access might be might do it unintentional. You know, you need to explain those kinds of things and what the impact is in your training product. Talk about availability, having the data available whenever the person needs it. But they also need to be authorized. And they need to be authorized for different levels for that confidential data. And if you really look at each one of these, there's some conflicting issues here. You know, maybe someone thinks they need access to it, the availability of it, but they're not authorized because it has confidential information in it. And pointing that out to the student is very important. And really conveying to the student that it's a process. It's not just a simple rule, it's a process. And really, how we protect our information resources, as we all know, is not just that individual, it is also the technical side too. So what is involved in the whole process? And our modules typically go through and talk about those kinds of things. And again, each one of the modules is only somewhere between 15 and 20 minutes at the most, depending upon the particular topic. Wow, copyright infringement probably hits all of us in some way, shape, or form, if it hasn't kind of surprised. What is copyright infringement? You know, do the students understand what that is? Define that for them. What does the institution do to prevent it? That's going to vary by every institution. So if you buy that commercial product, then you're going to need to be able to alter that, or in most cases, pay that vendor to do that for you. And your expenses are going to go right through the roof. Is it a crime? Yes or no? Does most students think it's a crime? I see a few nods around. Most of the time they don't these days. So what are the consequences associated? What are the penalties? You know, I get to speak to every incoming freshman through the entire month of June and all their parents. And I talk about security, I talk about the services we offer. But I also asked the student, I said, well, you know, if you happen to download a piece of music that you don't have the right to, what is going to be your way of going to mom or dad and saying, I only downloaded one song, but I need $150,000 to pay the fine? And I usually don't get a good answer. What is the consequences? What's associated with it? Show some of the examples. Show some of the current examples of the individuals who have went through the court cases. Lesson number 9, don't give up. You can do it. You can make your own product. Just make sure that you understand what it's going to take to do that and what are going to be the impact. Do you have the resources to do it? Do you have the knowledge? Probably you do. You can probably find it somewhere. But putting the product together, putting it in a format that's easily understandable by everybody may or may not be your expertise. So just work at it hard. And really grasp a hold of the idea that our role, even though we're probably technical, it's still education. We're there to educate those students and the whole constituency. In conclusion, information security has to be an everyday practice. You've got to change the habits of the people that you're dealing with. You've got to change their everyday habits. You're not going to do it with one training session. It has to be a series of events. It could be that introductory to training. It could be those posters. It could be some contest that you might run. But it has to be a series of events that continually reinforce what's in your training and, of course, what some of the new things are. And it needs to remind those individuals who have skin in the game of what their roles are for information security. We found that employers, when they come to some of our job fairs, in talking with them, if they can get have a student who puts on their resume that they've had information security training, and this was very much so in the financial sector, they valued that. We had an individual from the NASDAQ that said, wow, if you can give me a student that not only has a finance degree, but also has had information security training, that means a lot. So it could impact whether or not they might get a job or not. It's really very vital to corporate and personal life. And I kind of emphasize the personal life here. I don't know how many of the staff and faculty and many of the students have said, you know, after I went through that training, I've changed how I do something. Maybe it's a password, maybe it's how I deal with email or whatever. So it does become very vital to them. And most of the people that have done the training, they really perceive that it's been a value added to their knowledge base. So, you know, they have taken on some of the responsibility, maybe not as much as I'd like for them to yet, but it has made an impact, not just in their professional or student life, but their personal life and in how they handle information. This time I'd like to entertain any questions you might have. We will put this presentation on the conference proceedings. This is our website for information security at West Virginia University, and that is also my email address there. So does anybody have any questions at this point? Yes. That's a good question. Question is do, in looking at that lowest common denominator, did we think about what did we give up, if you will? We probably gave up complexity more than anything else. When I looked at the lowest common denominator and started experiencing what some of those people were, most of this was primarily in the staff faculty side. I was amazed at their abilities to use a mouse, to navigate various kinds of delivery methods. That's something we still have an issue with. We actually developed a how-to guide in the training, how to navigate the LMS. These are first-year students. So it probably caused us not necessarily to give up so much, but we had to do a lot more to accommodate and think a lot more about that lowest common denominator. We thought about doing different modules, but here again, the resources available to do that and to, you know, to customize them for that, we just didn't do that. Primarily because of the resource availability. Almost all of the review was done by non-technical individuals. So these were the people who were going to be taking the training. The first group that we actually did that with was we took a module and we took it to our human resources department. And we had them to go through it and give us feedback associated with that. We took some people that were clients of our disability services group. These were students. And we wanted to see if they could go through that particular thing. And that's an example of some of the things that we did as far as the different constituency. Very good question. When we did the narration, we did not do closed captioning. We've gotten a lot of feedback about that. Not so much to include in fact, I don't think we've had maybe only one or two people who has suggested we do closed captioning. Most of the people, the kind of feedback we've got was, is you're doing sensory overload because you have both visual and narration. And we chose a couple of people. The one was a DJ. Another person is actually doing voiceovers now from a commercial perspective. And I take a little bit of credit because I kind of got him into it by starting out with this. But we use both a male and a female voice for various modules. And it took a lot of time to do that narration. Closed captioning is something to add at some point in time. Question is, was the time and effort put into the narration worth it? It was fun. It was fun doing. I think we learned a lot. I learned to use some tools from that perspective. And I think overall I would say yes, because I have a lot of students who have come back and said, well, I just can't read all this. I said, well, okay, click here and it will be read to you. So understanding the ability to provide the content in multiple formats, I think, is important. Are you training custodians that don't use computers that are Yeah, the question is, are we training custodial and seal trades? Yes. Almost everyone in our dining services group went through a pilot with this. Biggest issue we have right now, we don't have a policy in place. We don't have a way to enforce it. Our CIO required everybody in the Office of Information Technology to take it, including the student workers. All the staff faculty must achieve 100% on the quizzes. The students, 80%. So they can do it multiple times to achieve that, but they still need to do that. We have a lot of ideas for add-on modules, let's say. We're currently working on one for FERPA. General counsel, we're working with them about doing a FERPA module, and it's more of an introduction so that when they go out to do a presentation, what they will really get is the specific questions from that particular department. And yeah, there's a lot of ideas about add-on pieces, but that's also a resource issue. Yes? The big stick for faculty and staff would be that the account is controlled by OIT. So if they didn't do the training, here again, the policy is not in place. So without that policy, it's so difficult to enforce it. There's actually not a policy in place for the students, but our first year experience group has been extremely helpful and very, very supportive of getting this to the students because they see the real advantage. Our intent is to move this out of the first year experience group this coming fall and into our residence life group, the student affairs group that I am part of. And what we will do is require them to do this, do the training before they arrive on campus. Wow, that's our ultimate goal there. Get them to do the training before they go on campus. The stick, you don't get connected to the ResNet. You don't get connected to wireless without having done this. Probably have a little bit of a grace period, those kinds of things, but that's what we're working on for this coming fall. And that was what we really wanted to do to begin with, was to get it to that point. Yes? Question is around the follow-on modules and the level, the technical level of those modules. Yes, that is one of the things that we're currently working on is to do those kinds of things, especially for system administrators, land administrators, those kinds of things. We're very, probably like a lot of campuses, very distributed. We're very non-centralized. And there's not a lot of collaboration that I would like to see amongst those various departments. So we recognize that follow-on modules needs to be much more technical, and we need to make sure that the subject matter experts are involved in that, and we get, again, the right level of information in each one of those modules. Okay. The question is, how do we get over the issue of tracking, especially for staff faculty, I assume. Is that right? Okay. What in our learning management system, we have an area that is called the Learning Academy. Your authentication to that is what we call our master ID. And when you're enrolled in this particular course, your master ID takes you right to that section, and the section you're in can be easily tracked within Blackboard or WebCT as to what you're doing with it, how you're doing on the quizzes. That can be reported back out, exported out in a spreadsheet and sent to whomever you would want to do. Student-wise, they're enrolled in the class. This security training is part of the shell that's in the first year experience class. So when they go to that, they simply see a tab for information security training. They click on that. The quizzes are already there. The quizzes are accumulated into the grade point average for that, or the grade point for that particular course. So the tracking has been the least of our problems. And as far as the flash piece, we've used some flash, not as much as I would like to, and probably if I was doing it over, I'd use a lot more flash. Again, a little bit primitive, but here again, was looking at that least common denominator. You know, do they understand to click on this arrow? Some people don't. You know, we make the assumption that everybody's, you know, they've used a recorder. Here's the arrows. Here's the way it works. And it's not that way for everybody. Any other questions? Well, again, I want to thank you for attending the session. I would really encourage you to go on to the conference program page and do an evaluation for the session. I look forward to seeing those. So a lot of times I get some good ideas for future presentations, so feel free to make any comments there. Again, thank you very much, and enjoy the rest of your day.